Hello, this is Jacqueline Howard of Greyhound Friends of New Jersey. I'm also the host of the About Greyhounds podcast. You're about to hear the second half of a conversation that I had with Patty Comerford about what you need to know when bringing home a greyhound for the first time. Patty and I did have this conversation in her backyard on a beautiful spring day, so you're apt to hear some outdoor noises like birds and, of course, dogs and maybe an occasional plane overhead, and you may even hear a lawnmower. But I assure you, you will hear us, and we will add clarity to what you need to know when bringing home a greyhound. So sit back, relax, and enjoy this episode. And if you missed part one of this conversation, be sure to listen to last week's episode. Enjoy. Last week's episode, we ended with what happens after the dogs meet maybe other dogs in the house, and maybe if there's cats in the house, what happens there. So I'm now going to throw it to Patty, who will talk about bringing the dog into your house for the first time.
Going to limit their access in the house, and that's where you use the baby gate. Your house should not be open to them all the time, every space. You're going to decide on a couple of rooms that you want them to have access to, and those will be the rooms where they live for the first couple of days.
So is that to not overwhelm them with too many new things? Okay.
And you're going to start alone training by going out for brief periods of time and leaving them alone. You can't have them think you're going to be there for them 24/7.
Yep.
So you're going to, if you're using a crate, put them in the crate, leave the house. If it's for 5 minutes, that's great. If it's for longer, that's even better. But you're going to go out and see how they handle themselves when you're not there.
You know, it's funny, Patty, and Linda had touched on this in another episode, and we touched on it a little bit in our separation anxiety episode. I can't tell you how many times I've had people say, you know, I want to adopt next week because I've taken that week off.
Right.
So I can be home to help the dog. And when they're trying to help the dog acclimate, but what they're doing in fact is making it a real challenge for the dog.
Yes.
So the truth is, go about your business. So the first day you have the dog, yeah, like do that. Like, you know, the go out training.
Yes.
How did you refer to
alone
it?
Alone training.
The alone training. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But other than that, like, go about your business. Because if you stay home for like a week, some people even told me they wanted to stay home for 2 weeks with, you know, to help
right.
the dog. And it's, now you've set that up as the normal for the dog. So when you do go to work, where are you? What happened to you? You know?
That often happens during the summertime when kids are home from school.
Oh, yeah.
The dogs get used to having the children home with them. And when September comes, it's very, very lonely.
Yeah.
And sometimes the dogs get depressed and, you know, start to act out because where is everybody?
Yeah.
You know, we had a fun summer, but now, you know, September isn't so much fun
right.
anymore.
Or even other people who have jobs where they have the summers off, like
teachers.
Say
yep.
teachers
mm-hmm.
or, you know, anybody working in the school system
yes.
that isn't required to be there all year round. That makes a lot of sense. I didn't even think about that.
Yeah.
Okay. I know there's some dogs that may be nervous, maybe their first time in a house if an adopter adopted a dog that we just got right from the track. Or maybe the home is new to the dog that's been fostered in another home. Sometimes they may decide to skip a meal or two until they feel more comfortable. So that's pretty normal. But when should I start to worry if they're not eating?
I usually give it 3 meals.
Okay.
You know, even when dogs come and visit me, I always think that they're not going to eat the first meal. Maybe I don't scoop their food out of their bag the same way their parents do, and they're just not going to eat that food. Maybe it's in a different bowl, so they're not going to eat that food. If they don't eat by the third meal, then you need to start thinking about what can I do to get this dog to eat. So there's lots of things you can add to food. You know, the big go-to is wet food. Mm. So you have a can of wet food. My one that I always recommend is Grammy's Pot Pie by Merrick. I call it Greyhound Crack because they just love it. And it has never failed me to get a dog to eat. You don't add a lot. You don't want to upset their stomach, but you do want to tantalize them a little bit and get them to eat their food. Sometimes if they see another dog eating, they will want to eat as well. Of course, it doesn't help if you only have one dog. There are other things you can add. You can add yogurt. You can add grated cheese, like Parmesan cheese.
But not too much. They're lactose intolerant.
You just want to add enough to get them a little bit interested.
Yeah, and the smell.
Exactly.
Yeah. You know what we do, Patty? We add, I have bouillon cubes.
Oh, okay.
So I'll make bouillon. I let it cool off to room temperature. I don't want to give something that hot to a dog.
Right.
And I'll mix that with their food. So it could be just a little bit, or maybe I'll make a soup out of the food and the bouillon. And that seems to work a lot too.
Right.
You know, in a pinch. Yeah. Let me tell you, that pot pie sounds really good.
Merrick makes great food with great names.
Yeah. I do want to talk about something else that a greyhound who hasn't been in a home before or in a home with stairs before may not know, and that is stairs. Most racing greyhounds, retired racing greyhounds, have never had to climb stairs. So what do you do if you have a multi-level home or a lot of steps leading into your home? Well, Al and I, we do this all the time with greyhounds, trying to get them upstairs. Some of them actually just do it. You know, they're perplexed by the stairs. And then they'll see, like, my younger dog, like, he basically flies up the stairs. I don't think he actually touched them. And they'll watch him, and my older dog, he takes his time, and he takes one step at a time, and they'll watch him, and then, bam, they're right up the stairs. And going down, that's a little different. But as far as going out for a dog who just doesn't get it right away, and most of them don't, we literally take the dog to the stairs, and we do... we pick up one foot after another and place it on the stair that that foot would naturally go to when climbing up the stairs. For going down, that's a little bit different because especially with a dog that's unsure. In that case, we face the dog. We're in front of the dog, of course, because we're facing the dog. And we go down the stairs backwards, holding onto the railing ourselves. You don't want to get hurt. And sometimes we coax the dog down. Sometimes we have a lead on the dog. You do not want to force the dog to come down the stairs, but we'll coax them with the lead, with some gentle, what would you call it, pulling. Mm-hmm. But again, like, you don't want to yank them down the stairs. Just don't do that. The other thing you can do is gently do their feet. That's better as a two-person job because, again, you don't want to fall. But I've yet to have a greyhound not learn the stairs. I've had a few fosters where it took a couple of weeks. I've had some, like I said, that just zip up. We do have a video of Al teaching a foster the stairs, so I'll link to it from the description of this podcast. So I've heard people say that greyhounds have to be shown glass furniture and doors. Is that true?
Well, yes. When you think about a new greyhound off the track, or even a greyhound from our prison foster program, they've never been in a home, so everything is pretty much new to them. They're used to listening to music at the kennel, so music and a TV isn't so strange. But sliding glass doors are something that they've never seen before.
Sure.
Mirrors.
Yeah.
Just almost anything can be brand new to them in a house. The vacuum.
Sure.
Hair dryers. that type of stuff. So, you know, if your greyhound reacts to those things, you just want to, once again, remain calm, just kind of laugh it off, like, oh, you silly thing. Look, this is just a hairdryer. It's nothing to be afraid of.
It's a great point.
Yeah, and just move along.
Yeah, and whatever you do, as you're saying that, I'm thinking of this. Whatever you do, if your greyhound's afraid of the vacuum or the hairdryer, whatever it is, do not go to comfort that dog, like by hugging him right. or giving kisses and talking baby talk. Oh, it's okay, baby. Because what you're doing is feeding into that fear.
Yes, exactly.
So like Patty said, you're so right. You just laugh it off. Just, this is normal. Everything's fine. You're giving off the vibe that is fine. And then the dog will soon realize, oh, everything's fine.
Exactly.
Yeah. So that makes sense. A lot of sense. So speaking of doors, and Patty, this was so drilled into my head when I adopted our first greyhound. To a trained racing greyhound, a door that's being opened is a mental trigger. So we really need to be careful with doors. And if you're a new adopter, new to greyhounds, this is something you really need to remember. And if you have young kids, teach them this, not to open the doors. And if you have to, put locks up high on the doors that kids can't open them. And let me tell you why. It's because an open door is like a racing gate. And they've been taught door opens, racing gate opens, bolt. And if your dog bolts, maybe there's a 50-50 chance that nothing will happen to that greyhound and you'll get him or her back. So just be very, very careful with doors. In our house, we barely use our front door. Unless people are coming over, and I know when they're coming over, so I usually know anyway, so I take precautions. We usually go out of our house through our attached garage. There's actually three doors I have to go through to get outside. The door to the laundry room, the door to the garage, and the garage door itself. Fortunately, we have a fenced yard. So because of that, when we open our back door, we can just let them out. But as far as glass, talking about that, we do take our foster greyhounds around and show them the glass door by putting their nose to it and showing them glass windows. Patty, you know, I often tell adopters that when they get their new greyhound home, they're to ignore the dog. With the exception of feeding, walking, letting the dog out in a fenced in yard, teaching the glass and stairs like we just talked about, I tell them they should do this for a few days. Can you talk about why it is we do this?
Basically, you want to not give them a whole lot of affection only because you don't want them bonding to you to the point where separation anxiety surfaces. You want them to acclimate to your house, get used to it kind of on their own power, not relying on you.
Sure.
I mean, they're going to rely on you for, as you said, the basics, food, going out, but you want like them to develop a sense of themselves within your house. So you're going to not hover over them. You're not going to, oh my gosh, what do you need from me now? You're going to let them be a little bit self-sufficient.
Sure.
Find their own bed, find their own way. And that way, hopefully, separation anxiety will not be a problem. And they'll be a better dog for it in the end.
Sure. And if separation anxiety does set in, call Greyhound Friends of New Jersey if that's where you've adopted your dog from, or call your organization where you got your dog from. Most organizations are ready to help you with stuff like this. It doesn't happen often that separation anxiety sits in, but when it does, there are things that can be done to rectify it. We also have a podcast in this series about separation anxiety, so do check that out. One other thing on this, I've had dog behaviorists tell me this, and I've read this in several credible places, that when you pour on affection in the beginning, what you're doing is sending a message to the dog that you're weak and not a leader. You're on their level, and they really want you to be the leader. So it's going to be really hard for you to quote unquote ignore the dog for a few days, but it's not hard on your dog, right? Believe us. So what about, so I've ignored the dog for a few days. After a few days, can I give affection?
Of course, of course. You always want to be careful. You know, these guys are affectionate, but you don't want to startle them when they're sleeping. That's always a big issue. They have teeth. They are dogs. They can bite. And it takes a second for something to happen.
Sure.
And you just want to be careful. You want to always remember that they're dogs. They're not babies. They're not little humans. They are animals. And in the back of your mind, you need to treat them like that.
Yeah, and they're also not used to that. I mean, they were working dogs.
Right.
And when they work with their trainers or anyone else at the track or in their training, they were treated as basically coworkers. You're not fawning all over your coworkers, or you're probably not.
Probably shouldn't be.
But that's a whole other subject. They're not used to it. And not that they were treated poorly, they weren't. But they were, think of them as having been co-workers to the people who worked in the kennels and the tracks. And they were treated as co-workers. So, treated nicely, but not with all that affection. They just haven't seen that before. So don't overwhelm them with it. So, Patty, when you bring a new dog into your house, you really want to establish leadership, your leadership. The dog wants you to be a leader, like I said. And one great way to do this is through power walks when you get your new dog. So what's a power walk? A power walk isn't a leisurely walk. I like to say it's not your daily constitutional. It's not a walk for the dog to relieve him or herself. It's a power walk that is really a mental exercise for the dog. So what you're going to do with a power walk is make sure you do the Linda loop for holding your leash, and basically that's a slip knot, and I will put the video to that in the description of this podcast. And then so that's one hand. With the other hand, you're going to double the leash so that you're holding the leash close to the dog's collar, and you are going to go on about 3 power walks a day. You're going to take that dog, you're going to walk briskly, you are going to look straight ahead, you are not going to talk to the dog unless it's to correct the dog. And if the dog tries to look at a rabbit, a deer, another person, another dog, a leaf, I don't care what it is, you're going to pull the leash gently to your hip and you're going to say, hey, a real quick correction, and keep walking. And what this is doing is teaching the dog to look at you as a leader. You are fully in charge, and it's reiterating that message every time you take the dog for a walk. So, if the dog has to relieve him or herself, of course, let them do that. I mean, we're not being mean to the dog on the power walk, but we are, again, just establishing the leadership. And it sounds like a little thing, but it actually is, like I said, reiterating that message in the dog's head. So, and one more thing with going for walks, whether it's your power walk or just a regular walk with the dog for fun or for the dog to relieve him or herself, you go out the door first. Again, it's a little thing, but it sends a big message. I am the leader. I will lead you out of the house, and the same coming back in. So, Patty, let's talk about sleeping arrangements. That's a dog shaking his head.
With a muzzle on.
With a muzzle on. That was great. And I think he just drank water, so it's all over me now. But anyway, let's talk about sleeping arrangements. So where should my new greyhound sleep?
That's a good question, Jacqueline, because many people say, oh, I'm going to let my greyhound sleep in the crate downstairs while I'm upstairs in my bedroom. Wrong answer. Your greyhound wants to be with you. You should make arrangements to have your dog have a bed in your room. or an area in your room.
Okay.
Think about this. You're at work all day. Your dog is crated. You come home. You have dinner. They have dinner. You watch some TV. Then you're going to go up to bed and recrate your dog. That's a terrible thing to do. Let them spend the night with you. I'm not saying they need to be on the bed, but let them be in the same room. They're pack animals. You're their pack. They want to be with you.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more, because that's our situation. We're both working during the day. Our dogs aren't crated because they're at this point they don't need it or look for it, but our fosters are. So at night, what we do is we make our bedroom a big crate, so to speak.
Exactly.
And we don't like to close our bedroom door because of our cats. They like to come in and out. And if we close the door, there'll be a price to pay for me. So what I did do, though, was put a baby gate at the entrance to my room. It's set up so I can do that. This way the cats can get in and out. But the dog senses that he or she is in a big crate and is with the pack, because they really are pack animals. And they've never slept alone.
Right, exactly.
Never. Yeah. So how long would you suggest, speaking of muzzles, you just mentioned the dog that just came over and shook the wet muzzle all over us, is muzzled. How long should I muzzle my new greyhound, especially if I have other dogs or cats or kids in the house?
Well, my dogs are old, and I've had them for a long time, and they're still muzzled. Anytime they go out in the yard, more than one of them, they're muzzled. Anytime I have more than one in the car, they're muzzled. Anytime I leave the house and they're not crated, they're muzzled. Mm. It's a safety factor when you have multiple greyhounds to use the muzzles. And you need to view them as a tool to help you, and they're not a horrible thing. If you only have one greyhound in your house and you're not crating, you can always use the muzzle when you leave the house as a way to make sure that your possessions will still be in one piece when you come back home. You know, windowsills are the perfect height for dogs to nibble on, and a muzzle will help with that. Muzzles are great because they let a dog drink water. My guys can play with toys with their muzzles on. So it doesn't really stop them from doing anything, but it adds a layer of protection for your house. If you have multiple pets, it adds a layer of protection for the other dogs.
Sure.
Is it a foolproof method? No, of course not. Muzzles come off. If they can play with the toy with the muzzle on, they can nip an ear with the muzzle on. But it puts your mind at rest.
Sure. Because they can bite. They can still bite with those muzzles on. And these muzzles, Patty, they're called basket muzzles?
Basket muzzles, yes.
Great. So, and Greyhound Friends and most Greyhound adoption organizations provide muzzles.
Yes. And you can also buy them online.
Sure. Okay. Good to know. One more thing on muzzles. Retired racing greyhounds are beyond used to these muzzles. It's not.
They are. It is not cruel. People always say, oh my gosh, how cruel is that? It is not cruel.
They're very lightweight.
You can even bedazzle them.
I'm sorry. Okay. If I ever have a girl greyhound, I'm always getting boys, I will certainly. You know what? I will bedazzle the boy.
We should have a bedazzle contest.
It's a great idea, actually. So, talk to me a little bit more about crating when I'm not home. Like, I've had people say to me, oh, how can you crate your greyhound? That's just, you know, it's just terrible to do. And the truth of it is, not all greyhounds need to be crated. My two, one of them, he's absolutely terrified of the crate. So, you know what? No crate. My other one loves his crate. It's in my bedroom. The door is open all the time. No one dares to go in there. They just don't. Just him when he feels like it. It's his place.
Safety area, yeah.
So what do you say when somebody says, oh, how could you crate your dog?
I have three crates in the house. One is used on a regular basis by one of my more difficult dogs when I go out. It gives me a sense of that I'm protecting the other dogs.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm protecting him. Another crate is used with a dog who used to get picked on. And I'm, providing a safe place for her. And the third crate is open. Anybody can go in it that wants to. Crates are kind of like a dog den. It gives them a space for themselves. It's almost a self timeout if they want to go in and just relax. And quite often, my guys, when the crates are open and nobody's in them, I'll find somebody in there just taking a snooze.
Sure. Yeah, it's like my dog. It's his, you know what? It's his quiet place. It's his zen place. It's his man cave.
Right. Exactly.
It really is. And it's funny how nobody goes in there. It's like it's an unwritten rule. And everybody seems to know that's his. So, Patty, you know, I'm going to switch gears a little bit here. We had our first greyhound before we had our kids. And after the babies came, I did the things that most parents do. I installed the baby gates. And, of course, all the other safety measures you take for babies and toddlers, like cabinet locks, removing breakables from their reach, all that stuff. My kids are older now. They're 11 and 15. But I left these things as is because they also keep the dog safe, too. In an upcoming About Greyhounds podcast, we'll be talking about babies, toddlers, and bigger kids with greyhounds. But for now, what kind of advice can you summarize for us about a home that adopts a greyhound when there's young kids living in the home?
Well, first of all, supervision, supervision, supervision. You never, ever want to leave a child alone with a dog. But like we said before, they're dogs. They're not small people. They're not furry people. They're dogs. So supervise. Baby gates, once again, are a great way to use that. The other thing you want to think about are children's toys are very similar to dog toys. So you want to be careful with that. You also want to be careful when a dog is laying down. You don't want a baby falling on them or walking over to them and pulling and tugging on them. And you don't want a baby running around when a greyhound is there because they're sight hounds and they might confuse something moving quickly for something that they should chase.
Yeah, and you know, I'm glad you mentioned running. Although this really isn't a story about running. Just to share a story, I consider myself, having had greyhounds for 17 years, having fostered for the last four, an experienced greyhound person. I'm also a parent. I mentioned my kids, so I consider myself an experienced parent. So here's the story. Let me also add, I am a safety freak. Like people laugh at me with the extremes I go to, and I know I can be extreme with safety, but here's what happened. So I was fostering this beautiful dog, and just gorgeous, big male, and people have heard me say this on the podcast before. I love the big males, the bigger the better, just love them. And he was black, and I love the black dogs. Sweetest dog ever. At the time, my youngest son was 9 years old. He's a little bit on the small side. He's also very much into his army men, and in the backyard he has sandboxes and a playhouse and a jungle gym and all sorts of areas where he will set up little battle scenes with his little army men. Hundreds, probably thousands of these army men are all over my yard where he set up scenes. And he'll be out there for hours doing it. And when he's doing this, of course, he's crouched down, usually sitting down with his legs crossed, you know, setting up his little scenes. And I had the big giant foster. We'll call him Jim. And I let Jim out in the yard with my two other dogs, all muzzled, of course. And no sooner do I let them out than I see Jim make a beeline for my son. And of course, you know, I could tell this was not going to be good, and I started running after him like I'm going to catch
right
a greyhound. But you who knows, when your mother instinct kicks in, you just bolt. And I raced for him, and he, of course, got to my son before me. And he basically went after my son. He was hitting him with his muzzle, like he was trying to bite him, but he, of course, couldn't really hurt him. And then one of my dogs, surprisingly, joined in on that, which just really was scary to me. And they were both basically going after my son with the muzzle. So I got to them very quickly, pulled them off of my son. My son, you know, he's screaming and crying. So I called the older son to come and bring him in the house. And once they were in the house, I let the dogs go, and then they're both just fine. So what happened? Well, even though my dog and the foster had been around my kids for about a week, it was outside. And there's a big difference to a greyhound between the prey instinct when inside and when outside. And the other thing, my son was crouched down. He looked very small. He's small right to begin with. He looked really small. So the dog, it just, his prey drive kicked in and he went after my son. And my dog, who'd been out in the yard many, many times with my son, he's a real follower. Like, he joined right in. So I learned my lesson. I never again let my little guy out in the yard when I'm not standing by him when the dogs are outside. It's until he's big enough, it's just not going to happen. So that was my fault. And I realized that. Although, Patty, thank God you were around. I called you and said I couldn't keep fostering the dog because at that point my little guy was terrified of the dog, and you know, just wouldn't have been fair.
Well, it wasn't your fault because you didn't know it was going to happen. You know, things happen, and you did the exact right thing. You took action. You took the correct action that you needed to, and you protected everybody. So you did the exact right thing.
Well, thanks for saying that. I feel bad, but I learned my lesson. And when I have the opportunity to talk to adopters that have little kids, you know, I share the story with them, you know, all the time.
Right.
Yeah. So, you know, just be careful. Use as much common sense as you can. Like Patty said, like, I really had no way of knowing that would happen. It never happened in all the years I had greyhounds, but it happened. So, and now I know, and I'm able to share that with people. So hopefully we prevent it from happening again. And just to add to that, my son was not hurt at all. He was scared.
Yeah.
He was very scared. It took me a while to calm him down, but he was just fine. So, and the dog is fine, and he's now living a wonderful...
He's living a great life.
He is really... I want to live that life. So, so anyway, that's kind of a long story. So, let's say my greyhound gets into something that he or she shouldn't be in. Like, let's say she chewed up my favorite pillow. Or maybe I catch the dog counter surfing, which is, means, you know, putting their front legs up on my counter. What do I do?
Well, many of us use the "hey" sound.
Well, you got my attention.
There you go. I'm very good at it at this point in time. You know, bottom line is, if you don't see them do it and they've chewed your favorite pillow, there's not a whole lot you can do about it. You know, your job is to dog-proof your house. So if you realize they like pillows, from now on, pillows go away. As far as counter surfing, what I use is a spray bottle, and I squirt them with the spray bottle, and it successfully has stopped them to the point where I don't even need to touch the spray bottle. I just need to look like I'm going to reach for it, and they will stop doing what they're doing. The bottom line is, you know, you don't want to stand there yelling and screaming. You want to make a quick correction and move on.
Okay, that makes sense. Patty, something I'm going to touch on just very briefly, because we'll be dedicating an entire episode to this. But greyhounds have blood that's very different from all other types of dogs. For example, they have a very high red blood cell count. And having that high red blood cell count carries more oxygen through to their hearts. And this is one of the things that makes them the second fastest land mammal in the world. So why is it important to know that their blood is different, especially for medical professionals?
greyhounds are very sensitive to anesthesia. So when you pick a vet, you want a vet who is aware of that fact, who is greyhound savvy, and if your dog needs anesthesia, will follow the correct protocol. There's information on the Greyhound Friends website and on the Greyhound Friends app to inform you about greyhound blood values and how greyhound blood values differ from other breeds.
Great. And I often tell adopters to present that information to their vets. Yes. Chances are the vets know that. But if a vet is not familiar with greyhounds, and of course that happens, they can't be familiar with every breed, you're not going to insult them. Show them the information. Give it to them, because it's important they have it.
It's also in your packet when you adopt a greyhound. We give you a packet of information. It's printed out for you. It's very easy to just hand it to a vet.
Perfect. So what I'll do in the description of this podcast, I will put a link to that card and a link to the app so that people can get that as well.
Great.
So I want to take a moment to repeat something one of our former board members said about newly adopted greyhounds. She said, a retired racing greyhound has lived a very simple life. What does that mean?
Well, it means that they had limited exposure to a lot of things. They lived in a kennel, they had their job, they had a routine and a schedule that they followed, and that was their life. So what we talked about earlier about houses and not knowing things in houses, that's why we've said all of that. They thrived where they were, and so our job and now as adopters is to help them thrive in our homes. And following the suggestions of having a routine and a schedule helps that.
Sure. So for people in our audience who have adopted from Greyhound Friends of New Jersey or plan to, I want to point out just one more time that Greyhound Friends of New Jersey is truly a community and highly supportive. From the moment you adopt your greyhound and for the rest of that dog's life, we are just one phone call, text, or email away. And we encourage you to call us or reach out to us whatever way you wish to let us know when you have questions or to give us an update on your dog. We love hearing from people. That said, I want to share a very personal story with you. Patty and I both foster. We've mentioned that. And we both love our fosters in every sense of the word. They're our dogs, even for just a little while. So last week, I got a call from an adopter. She had adopted one of my dogs a few years back, and his name was Buddy. He's a very young dog, and his adopter got in touch with me because he was diagnosed with cancer, and the adopter was going to relieve the dog of his pain and put him to sleep. So, Patty, you know, when I talked to you about this, this is the first time in my fostering career that a foster has been put to sleep. And, you know, I kept in touch with the adopter for a few days because she'd gotten the diagnosis on a Sunday, and she took him on Wednesday to be put to sleep. And, you know, and I called you because I was so upset about it, and I was surprised because, like I said, we love these dogs. And even though I haven't seen the dog, you know, in a few years, my heart just broke, and I really felt for his family and, of course, for myself. You know, I was really sad about it. So I am dedicating this podcast to Buddy and to his mom. And of course the whole family, because you know, that was the first time I experienced that, and I know you've experienced that in the past, and it's hard.
It's very, very difficult. You're right. We do consider these dogs, these fosters, part of our family for however long they're with us. And fortunately, quite a few people stay in touch after they adopt. But, you know, you lose touch after a while, and, you know, people's lives go on. So when you hear about a dog who has taken ill, it's always tough. So it's a very sweet gesture to put this podcast in his memory.
Thank you, Patty, for once again sharing your insights and expertise on about greyhounds, and for sharing this beautiful backyard with me today.
With lawnmowers and birds and barking
and
dogs.
And that's okay. You know, that's part of life. And, I love having the dogs around. You would not tell me how many are here. And I am nearsighted. So I don't know who's who, and nobody's out here at the same time. But I know there's several black, fawn,
Brindle.
So who knows? Who knows? There could be 30 dogs here. I don't know. But thank you so much, Patty, because your experience is, you know, just really valuable. And I appreciate you sharing it with us on this episode, and for letting people know, you know, what they can expect and do when they bring that greyhound home for the first time.
Thank you, Jack.
Jacqueline again. I really enjoyed having that conversation with Patty Comerford. If you missed the first half of the conversation, please go back to last week's episode and you'll be able to hear it there. At Greyhound Friends of New Jersey, we are dedicated to helping greyhounds find their forever homes once they've ended their racing careers. All of this takes a lot of time, a lot of volunteers, a lot of sweat, and of course, it takes money. If you've been enjoying the About Greyhounds podcast series, please consider making a donation to our organization. You can do so on the Greyhound Friends of New Jersey website at gfnj.org, where you will find, right on our homepage, a donation button where you can use PayPal, debit, or credit cards to do so. I'll also have a link to the website in the description of this episode. Thank you for listening, and I'm looking forward to talking to you next time.